You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Mike Crawford, girls basketball coach at Enterprise High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Derek. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. Coach, for those that might not be familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and specifically your coaching journey and how you ended up as the girls basketball coach at Enterprise High School?
Interestingly enough, I did not play basketball in high school. I loved basketball, but I actually was a wrestler. And that was just something that we played football, we wrestled, and ran track and baseball. When I got to college, of which I went to Oregon State, I had the opportunity to play intramurals like everybody else and expand my world in the basketball direction. And just to give you a heads up, when I started into my teaching potential career at that point, I did my student teaching at Willamette High School in Eugene. And my mentor instructor was Pat Bailey. Mm. Are you familiar with Oregon State baseball?
I am, yeah.
And you know who Coach Bailey is then?
I do, yeah. Long time. He was, and before Oregon State, he was at George Fox, I think, and had a ton of success.
Correct.
There. Yeah.
Yep, and at West Lynn. And Pat was, this is early in his career. And like I said, I was a senior in college. And I coached baseball with him in my spring student teaching time. So he was kind of my first mentor teacher, coach also. And his attitude toward kids and stuff got me started. I graduated with a degree in business education and went to Arlington, Oregon. I had the opportunity to coach with Lee Bittinger, in basketball and work with him during my time there, and be mentored by him. He won two state titles, one while I was there. Actually, my very first year of teaching, our team won the state title in football. They won the state title in basketball, and they came really close to winning a state title in baseball. From there, I officially, professionally, assisted. I didn't have a head coaching job in basketball there. I assisted in the boys and the girls program until 1986, and then we moved to Enterprise. I went through several years of coaching football, coaching anything I could, until 1989 when I got hired to be the head girls basketball coach. I had the opportunity. Dick Quinn was the head girl boys coach at the time. I spent every day around his practice watching, learning, augmenting things that I had already kind of started to develop when I'd been with Lee. And working with Dick, who in this side of the state is a legend in this world, and chasing him and his accolades, I guess, is something that I've been doing all my career. This is year 32. If we go into next fall, it'd be my 33rd year coaching here at Enterprise.
Wow.
I had the opportunity to work with Gary Sather. I worked for the ESD prior to working at Enterprise High School. Gary Sather was coaching in Joseph. And then the combination of people. I've just been very, very fortunate to have coaches and people who worked around me, and including my own coaches when I was in high school, who all won state titles, all knew quality things about how to coach and how to get a hold of kids. And I've just gleaned as much as I could from all of them. So that's up from then to now. I've had the ability to count all my games, but I have 758 varsity games under my belt now. So it's been a journey, no doubt.
Yeah, no kidding. And now, you know, thankfully you get to share some of that wisdom with us and the rest of the state. So very, very cool, Coach.
Appreciate that.
Well, I want to ask you, too, you know, you coached boys and girls, and I've had the opportunity to do the same. And one of the questions I always get is, you know, what's the difference? You know, what are the differences that you notice in coaching boys and girls? And so I'm going to ask you that, Coach. What's kind of the difference between coaching boys and girls?
You know, I would have told you a long time ago when I very first started coaching that there was a big difference between the two and how they reacted to coaching. But I think the further that we have come in time, closer to now, I see that the difference between coaching boys and coaching girls has gotten a whole lot closer. I think that girls in particular are better, in my mind, at accepting coaching and wanting to do, they're not so much stuck in their own individual world as I guess I see in a lot of boys.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been coaching girls for 32 years now, so I've seen the boys program. I see the things that are happening. I just think it's a whole lot closer now to very similar in style and ability. A lot of things are closer. So,
yeah,
best answer I can give you.
For sure. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, 32 years and even longer if you include, you know, your time before getting to Enterprise. That's not something we see a ton nowadays with coaches that usually get out of coaching before they've been in it long enough to really experience what you have. What has led to your longevity in the coaching profession?
I've thought a lot about this, why it's lasted so long, what's happened. First of all, I've been in a very fortunate situation, coaching in Enterprise. Very, very few issues, that I've had to work through. I mean, there's always some dealing with parents, and what their beliefs are. But I've been just very fortunate to have quality kids to work with. And I taught in the school district, you know, for 26 years. So that also has helped me quite a bit. I'm going to share with you one thing that I did early in my, right at the very beginning of my coaching. I got involved in a Pine Eagle basketball camp for girls basketball that was being run at the time by Chuck Peterson in Halfway, Oregon, who was my high school teacher, high school math instructor that I kind of idolized and patterned myself around. Also won a state championship. Got to work with Joel Richardson and from who was a two-time state champion at Jordan Valley and then coached in Baker, and a whole bunch of other coaches. But it was always for girls. It was always reasonably priced. And literally right up until COVID happened, I've been taking girls to basketball camp for over 30 years. And I think it's been a critical part of my program. We start by taking kids. It evolved. It started to be 7th and 8th grade, and it worked its way down to 5th grade. But we were taking kids starting going into their 6th grade year all the way through grade 12. Basketball camp for a week. I've been taking over 30 of them, and we would take a set of parents, and all I can tell you is that has been a critical, they get to know me, I get to use my older kids as mentors, and establishing a connection all the way down through the basketball program. And it's really helped to have my world be continuous.
Yeah, that's awesome. You did bring up, you know, parents, which is oftentimes something that we as coaches maybe struggle with or get frustrated with. Do you have any advice for things that you have done that, that have helped you in dealing with parents?
I do. My high school coach, both football and wrestling, Chuck Korak, who actually is in Enterprise and coached here. And one of the things that we did when I was in high school is we had a dinner at coach's house day before we'd have an event. And I call them outlaw nights. Outlaw nights are where we ended, what I ended up doing, and it worked really well, is we would go to all of my varsity players' houses, their parents' house. And so I would get into their home. I would get to have conversations with their parents in their home. And by the time, you know, you get through a season and then you get through multiple seasons, if you have kids that are multiple years varsity, if they don't know me by then and they don't agree with me, they know it and I know it, you know. I just haven't had very much of that because I opened myself up to them and, you know, gave them opportunity to be involved. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all happy with me every day, simply because you can't. You can only put five girls out there on the floor at a time, and not everybody agrees with what you do and how you do it. But I've always at least had those connections where I talk with them and do my best to work through it. Deal with me first. If you don't like what I'm doing, then you can go over my head.
I'm curious, Coach, how has the game and even your coaching maybe style and philosophy changed over your 32-plus years as a girls basketball coach?
My philosophy of basketball has, right from the get-go, I wanted to take girls and teach them how to run and just get high-tempo basketball as fast as often as I could. I had lots of people, mentors even, who didn't believe that girls could run like that, but they can, and we do. I would tell you that I think that the game has changed in that the skill level has improved across the board for those who have worked at it from a young age. The basketball has gone farther out. I mean, we got kids that are shooting, you know, beyond 20 feet with ease, easily. And, it's just forcing a higher level of, you know, work if you want to win. And, I don't know. My philosophy hasn't really changed that much, but, my style has altered. I've tried to adapt to what I had for players. You know, it's all been at a small 2A school. So mm-hmm. I've been fortunate to have had pretty quality athletes in that whole time, but it's not always been easy.
No, not at all. If I were to come and watch a practice, what would I see and maybe what would I hear from you and your players?
Well, right off the bat, you would see them working on fundamental basic things to get warmed up. I like a ball handling session to be going on with defense on occasion. It depends upon the day. I do different things different days, but we definitely do a 10-minute ball handling warm-up with defense, skill work. They know their weaknesses. They know the things that they need to work on. And I assist with that as much as I can. Hey, this is what I think you need to be doing. Then from there, we're right into it. You know, I jump into getting up and down the floor to, one, get passing the ball in while moving. I love five-man weave both directions. I love to work into I have different drills like everybody that probably take 20 minutes to get us through, and they probably get, I don't know, 50 lengths of the floor in during that time. And maybe I got it compressed a little too much, but it's a lot. And then we get into the meat of the day. What it depends upon the day, I emphasize, I have an offensive day I emphasize. I have a defensive day I emphasize. I have the other things that we are going to work on. If we're going to do full court press, if we're going to half court press, if we're going to work on inbound plays and all the other stuff. And then pregame day, I'm set. In our world, we play typically on Friday and Saturday, occasional Tuesday game, but predominantly Friday, Saturday. So in league season, we're playing a league opponent on Friday night, a league opponent on Saturday night. And quite often we've had situations where byes are involved. So you have those days where you get a bye and then you play, or you play and then you have a bye. And depending upon how that matches up, changes. Because if you played and your opponent did not play the night before, obviously there's an advantage gained there, and complicated, but we do our best to prepare for the two that we got to play that weekend. Go from there.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about, within practice, telling kids what to work on. We try as coaches to make sure we're giving that feedback. I'm curious, how do you approach the conversation, which is sometimes difficult with players, about kind of buying into their role on the team and what it is that you're expecting them to do and how they contribute?
I'm right up front with all of my players about where they are. I've spoke to a lot of teams about, do you know where you fit in this program? Do you see your role? And if you don't, talk to me about it, and I will talk to you about it. I want them to be aware, and I want them also to understand we can't play a great quality of basketball with simply five players. It's got to be the whole team, and everybody's got to buy in. There's going to be things that happen that create an opportunity for every player to get on the floor at some time, pretty much. And, I want them to buy into what they're – and when it's their time, to make the most of it. And realize that if you don't, there's a reason. Something happened. I talk to them about it. We talk about it a lot at our outlaw night. We talk about it every day at practice, trying to keep us all on the same page and everybody understand what their job is. There's moments where it's not perfect. And kids may be seeing themselves as being better than they are, or not as good as they are. I try to be as open as possible with them so that they, are comfortable with what I have to say.
Can you talk a little bit? You talked about being an up-tempo style and haven't done that for a while. I know you guys also run, I think what you call the quote-unquote buzz defense. Can you talk about that defense a little bit? How do you use it, kind of the philosophy behind it, and what you look to get out of it?
Derek, can you tell me where you heard that?
I read it in a newspaper article, Coach, in my research.
Wow. Buzz defense was something that was way many years ago. The actual name of buzz and how it was created and it was presented to me, and I did it back in the days of when we were going to the state tournament every year. I had a stretch of basketball teams where we played in the district championship game 8 years in a row. We finished up in the top of the state for 7 of those years, and when I say top of the state, I mean top five. And, you know, we had a really some great combinations of girls there that athletically could do lots of things. I don't run Buzz exactly anymore. We do, for lack of a better term, a matchup 1-2-2 zone where we have a rotation involved in it. And it came out of Eastern's program. My assistant coach who played for me 4 years, Annalise Stein, got to play 3 years for Angie and opportunity to, you know, work that into our system. And that's the defense we run a lot. We extend it as far as we need to. And I like pressure on the ball. I learned recently in the last 5 years where we, you know, we can't, I used to teach them, you know, you get your feet, toes on the line, the 3-point line, and anybody that wants to shoot out there, we'll let them.
Right.
Well, these days you can't. That's not good enough. You've got to go a little farther out there. Those girls have figured out how to put it in the basket from deep and creates more space, you know, and you know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
Better be able to cover.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
We play that way all the time. If I extend it to a full court, we'll do, you know, 1-2-1-1 and trap and press and, you know, push and try to get mistakes. But you know, you play good basketball teams. They know how to break the press. It doesn't take very long. And if they're laying it in on us at the other end, I don't stay in that very long. I have had some real success with a 3-quarter press. Way more than anything else, especially when you get late season. People just haven't seen it. Don't understand what's really quite going on. So, yeah, I threw out something there I should have kept to myself, but, you know. It's getting late in the game for me. So.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. I think, you know, even if you know it's coming, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to break it, right? That's the thing. So I'm curious, you know, you talked about 1-2-2 matchup zone, which is different than maybe what I see some 2-3 matchup zones. Do you know, I mean, how is it different? I'm kind of curious, the 1-2-2 versus a 2-3 matchup.
You know, I think it depends upon the guy that's doing it. You bring a high, what'll happen to us is typically somebody will bring a high post in there, right at the beginning just to force us to adapt. It's easy to move to a 1-3-1 and, you know, I don't know. We literally will adapt our play to match what you put out there. And quickly, and it, you know, it's not man, even though you know the principles of when you're playing in a zone, it's still doing man principles. But we have a rotation that we do out of it, and we're pretty successful with it.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Crawford right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The start of school means it's time to sign up or renew your Oregon Basketball Coaches Association membership. OBCA membership includes access to exclusive resources that help personalize instruction, understand players' mindsets, and maximize the impact of your practices. Members also receive access to the OBCA mentoring program and have a voice in improving the game at the state level. Membership starts at just $15 a year. Register online today at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Mike Crawford. Coach, you've had the good fortune of winning over 500 games, which is pretty impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What do you contribute to that success?
Putting my finger on exactly what it is, I think you got to be fortunate, and I have been. I've had, for the size of school that we're in, I've been blessed with some great players right through my career. I also think you got to surround yourself with good people. I've done that. And then you got to have the people within the program that are connected to the program have to believe in it. If they all believe in it, you know, that's good for wins that you may not get typically. I don't know. I've just been in that mode for so long of kids that they had the team that they played on the year before, and they really didn't have that role that they want, was successful, and then they want to be in that spot, and so they do what's necessary. And we go to, camp together. In recent years, I've been taking my kids to Malala for a camp down there at Country Christian, and it's just been extraordinary to, you know, have that tournament stuff in the summer happening. It's really boosted us, helped us a lot. Just very, very fortunate, Derek.
Yeah.
You know, I would rather be lucky than good.
Yeah, for sure. One of the hard things to do is, you know, after you win is maintain that success. And I get, you touched on it a little bit, but I'm curious if you do anything, maybe to keep, I don't know if that keep kids humble is the right kind of phrase, but you know, sometimes you start winning and your program's super successful, kids then just expect to win, when they show up. So how do you kind of help maintain that success and keep kids focused on what they need to be doing to be successful?
I think just the basic start of an athlete's entry into the program from being in the younger grades, grades 7 and 8 prior, knowing what the expectations are, knowing that if you want to be a part of the program and be successful, what you've got to do, how you got to work on your developing your skills. Now, that's not the same for every year and every team, but we try to have them understand what they want. And it's been easy using past teams to talk about performances of, you know, why it worked and, you know, what success did we have. And I don't know, the track record, the further it goes, it seems like it builds. I would tell you, it really didn't happen till that you get that special group that comes through that, like I talked about, the run of girls that I had for that Japan, that's where it really opened the door for the program to be great. And kids talk about it. They want to be in it. They want to be part of it.
What does your typical game preparation look like? Not every coach, I think, might be familiar with. At the 2A level, you guys have a lot of travel. You play Friday, Saturday, so it probably looks a little different than, say, what I would do, because we play every Tuesday, Friday. So what does your game prep look like? How much film do you watch? Do you watch film? Do you give scouting reports to your kids? What do you do?
Derek, I have every film of every game I have ever coached since basketball started for me. I have them all. I watch film relentlessly, and that's one of the things that I break it down. I show them film here and there. I don't necessarily just sit down and break a film down with them, but I will show them film. And it's definitely changed since I got into the huddle world. That didn't exist prior, you know. But I want them to. It's easy for me. I think more so to break down my opponent, as well as assist my own team to what we can do. So when we're going into a weekend, like I said, if I'm playing two league opponents this week, I'm talking to them about defensively where we got to be, what we got to do, who we got to stop, or how we can slow them down, trying, you know, what's the best plan of attack. And it is hard because we play back to back. And, you know, depending upon your, I've been very fortunate to have, I think it's also one of the things that's led to having good seasons is to have high quality opponents in our league. If your league is tough and you're in that tough crowd, you're prepared to play at the next level. So going to postseason, playing district tournament, going post that, playing at the state tournament, kids are ready. They've played that competition level and they're capable of playing with anybody. That's what I want. Prep game for game is, all done, you know, best thing we can do to prepare for two teams that may be totally different from each other mm-hmm. on Friday and on Saturday. And also, you know, home and away. You were talking about travel. I think I might have the record for the most miles on a bus. I think I do.
Yeah. I'm definitely not going to contest that.
Our league, our closest opponent right now is 70 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And our farthest opponent is 195. So, you know, you drive 195 miles, play a basketball game starting at 6 o'clock on a Friday night, come home and play the next day, and our league is 2 hours earlier on Saturday. You would think it'd be kind of the opposite of that, play earlier Friday, later Saturday, but we do it that the opposite. Start at 1 o'clock with JV on Saturday, and you know, not very many home home away away scenarios, but it's usually one double travel and one double home.
Yeah,
I could talk about that kind of stuff forever because there's a lot of it, a lot to it.
Yeah.
And having something available to play the next day.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Do you think that those bus trips help with team chemistry?
I was the bad guy when cell phones started
mm-hmm.
because, I was a little bit naive for a while, not really realizing what was happening, but having kids that are sitting 10 feet apart, you know, three chairs away from each other, texting to talk, as opposed to talking with each other. And, you know, as soon as I realized that, I took cell phones, put them in a bag. You can have them after the game. Talk to each other. Face-to-face communication, I think, is important in life, in everything that we do. And having them have the ability to communicate with each other. And you know what? You take the phones away and the bus level changes. You can hear them communicating with each other. I totally think that's important.
Yeah. I've done something similar, and I found that very valuable for our kids, especially on the long bus trips, right? Which
yeah.
for you is any bus trip.
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, you know, you got that much time and you're locked in an enclosed space. A lot can be done in that time. Now I want them to have downtime. No doubt, but at the same time, you know, kids communicating with each other about, and I don't know how it is maybe for you guys, but for us, all of the kids seem to know all of the kids. Nothing new. When we go somewhere or they come to us, we know what we have to do and who we have to deal with.
Right.
And they know each other personally. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned you start practice with some, you know, basic fundamental drills. I'm curious, you know, even in the off season or summer, how do you approach player development? You know, oftentimes at a smaller school, you have kids that are playing multiple sports. So how do you what kind of player development program do you have to help make sure that kids are continuously improving throughout their time in your program?
We as soon as we can get on the floor in the spring, we get back together and we open up practice to get kids on the floor working together. And literally anybody in the program can come. I deal with summer, and we go right into summer until we get to Pine Eagle basketball camp. We do one full week there, of which that is starting at 8 o'clock in the morning and basically ending about 8 o'clock at night, for 5 days. We play summer ball games and have summer practices around kids' time schedules the best that we can. And I am done typically by third week in June. And I totally let them, you guys do what you got to do from there. There is crossover where I'm dealing with, you know, softball players. I've had kids that have been very good about, you know, I find out what their schedule is and what can I do to make it work for you. And they work with me on it. You know, and by the end, you know, the end of June, it's like, you guys, you go have a summer, do what you're going to do, whatever you want. And then we're going to get back together when we can, as soon as basketball starts in the fall. And, obviously you get a zillion opportunities to see camps and things that are available out there. I have kids that'll go to camp, and I have a lot of kids that'll just, if I have one thing that I want my kids to do, it's play basketball with boys. If girls play basketball with boys and they can hold their own playing with boys, they are the better players. Boys play, you know, they just have a different level of what they can do physically, stronger. And I have kids that get it done.
Yeah. That's why so many D1 women's programs have male practice players, right? That's to help simulate that same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As the game's changed a little bit, analytics have become a big part of the game. You know, you look at Nate Oates at Alabama and their shot selection. I'm curious, how do you use analytics? What stats do you keep to kind of provide feedback on how you make certain adjustments or coaching decisions?
You know, that's changed a lot. I've always kept a shot chart and percentages, you know, from position, where are we best at, and how to get our best, you know, shooters in the spot that they're the best at. I wouldn't say that I'm an expert on analytics other than, you know, knowing how to get the shot we want, you know, understanding spacing and opportunity and, you know, ball position, how that pass has to come to have the time to get the shot off. Versus the bad pass, you don't get it off, you know, or, and turnovers and how many turnovers are acceptable, versus, you know, our tempo and what we're trying to do. Shooting percentages, where should we be at and what are we at? I don't know. I'm not, like I said, I kind of have this thing that I've always done and how I talk about it, and, you know, it's like the number of points scored in a game, the number of trips up and down the floor, those things are not crazy changed since the beginning of my coaching career. Mm-hmm. The things that have changed I got some stuff right now just after sitting in and watching the NC2A tournament that I want to try. That's brand new stuff to it, to how, you know, it fits with what I've been doing, but it's like a whole different concept, and I'm just looking forward to trying it.
Yeah.
I think we're always out adapting, and I'm not afraid to change something, to innovate something, you know, even in practice, when I have girls that, you know, come up with something that they think is going to be effective and why against a certain team, or every time, it's crazy that way. It's okay, man. I think you can get pretty stuck in doing set offense, you know, and I don't like to do that. I want it to be, I'll go to a set, but that, you know, I think the basketball now is a game of understanding when to attack and, you know, when to penetrate, when to pull up and when to pass,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
where to be, how to be there. But yeah, it's such a reactive game, but I don't know if I'm the best guy to talk to you about analytics.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any maybe statistical goals that you set maybe before a game that you're trying to reach, and maybe what are those?
I really pay attention to assists to turnovers, you know, how many turnovers versus how many assists are we getting. And, you know, if we are functioning where I also keep track of where our turnovers are happening, where on the floor they're happening. I don't know. I've been watching and relaying information, but I don't know. I don't know really have an answer that fits into that, honestly.
Yeah. That's okay. Maybe more of a feel as you're kind of watching the game and processing, and
no doubt about it. I totally go by my gut on the floor. Yeah. I will run 5 different sets in the first 5 plays down the floor, strictly because I want to see how the defense is being played against us. Mm-hmm. And looking for a weakness. It's kind of from the old days of running a script, and I want mm-hmm. to see and what comes out of that script, and then I'm hoping that in that first 5 sets, you know, based upon, you know, whether or not we're pressing to begin with or not pressing or running, have we actually had a chance to even set up yet? But what is going to work against this team tonight, and how can we beat them?
Simple enough.
Yeah, not a very good answer, but it's how it works.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, obviously, we talked a little bit beforehand about this pandemic and the likelihood of us getting to play a basketball season. I'm kind of curious, how have you kind of engaged players without being in direct contact and keeping them engaged? And how are you kind of adapting or planning to adapt to this kind of strange hybrid summer season that we're preparing for now?
You know, what we did is, in season 1, as soon as volleyball was over and, operating on a system, my assistant also being the PE teacher, in our gym, every 6 feet, there's a piece of tape on the bleachers all the way around the gym, all the way around the walls. And, it was like 3rd week in October. I got my kids together as they came in the door. We did the COVID meet you deal of asking them all the questions about, you know, everything that we had to drill them on. Out of state, have temperature, yada, 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 one by one, and assign them a station. Tell them to take their water bottle there. And I came up with a whole system of fundamental work where we could keep our space, you know, as the state said, we can share a ball. We got to wash mm-hmm. the ball every now and then. And anyway, for lack of a better term, getting together to practice fundamentals of basketball is what we were doing. And we did it for 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you the one of the things I gained out of that was we became way better shooters. We shot a lot, passed a lot, handled the ball a lot. Creative, you know, how you do a weave without crossing over within 6 feet of each other. Just to work down the floor, you know, and be creative with it. And we did it. So that's what, how I kind of got, you know, my hands-on approach with them to do something with basketball. At the end of January, we ended, because the whole new season was about to begin and people were wanting to get back into it. And I haven't had much, just occasional, because I sub in the school once in a while, interaction with my kids when I can. I hope that fundamentals time pays off. You know, it's totally different, though, because when you're not playing against defense, it's way easier to be a shooter.
Right. Very true.
I had the opportunity to work with a coach that used to say, you know what, if nobody's in your face, you should make half of them easy, no matter where you are. Well, that's not always the case, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Crawford will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Mike Crawford. He's the girls' basketball coach at Enterprise High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer. And I am going to ask you some rapid-fire questions that should only have 1 to 2 word responses, hopefully.
Okay.
And we're going to see how many questions we can get through in 35 seconds.
All right.
Sound good?
Yeah.
All righty. Putting 35 seconds on our timer starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds on the clock, do you foul?
No.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Over the top.
Do you think the three-point line should be moved back?
No.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Hoosiers.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
Dinner.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Professional.
All right. Well done, Coach. Good possession. Good possession there.
I was actually fortunate enough to, in 2017, the Officials Association presented me with an award for outstanding sportsmanship and coaching ethics.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, Derek, from the beginning, early in my career, I had my moments of you know, thinking that I knew everything and I needed to be after him. Let me back up 2 seconds. I officiated varsity basketball for 3 years prior to coaching basketball in Enterprise. Because
mm-hmm.
I wasn't coaching. And I got to know, one, how they're supposed to move, where they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to signal, yada, yada. And I received a technical foul in my very first year of coaching, one.
Mm-hmm.
And I received one my second year of coaching, and I haven't had one since.
Mm.
And I'm professional with them. I treat them more like I'm talking to somebody about, you know, what I see, and I'm not, they know if I'm getting animated, there's something wrong.
Right.
So, you know, things happen. It's, ball does weird things and people have bad days, you know, you do what you do. But if the fouls are 7-0 in a girls' basketball game, there's usually something way off. That's not typical.
Right. Very true. Very true. That's great. Coach, I want to ask you to maybe elaborate on your shot clock answer a little bit. It is kind of a hot topic issue both in our state and across the country. With the NFHS and trying to get them to implement it at the high school level. You mentioned you're in favor of it. Can you elaborate on why?
I've in my film study, I've actually analyzed a lot about how much time we are in possession of the ball with, you know, shot hitting the rim because that's a reset. And very, very seldom do we get to 30 seconds. Time of possession. So a shot clock wouldn't hurt us in any way, as opposed to, I know we've played against lots of others who will maintain possession as long as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a different kind of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe you can do a lot of basketball in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's 30, 35, you know, it doesn't matter. I just know that there's Washington plays with a shot clock.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of states out there that do it. Anyway, that's what I think.
Yeah. What's the strangest thing you've seen in a basketball game or situation?
I have two. The first was I went to a basketball game between the Dalles and Centennial, and this must have been about 1982, 83, 84, somewhere right in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the halftime score was 2-0. The tip went up, and Centennial got the tip, and they held the ball the entire first quarter, took a shot at the buzzer, missed it. The Dalles got the ball at the start of the second quarter, scored immediately. Centennial held the ball the rest of the half. Now, I will tell you that in the third quarter, the Dalles got a lot more aggressive about getting in the passing lanes and got a couple steals. And as soon as the game went to 6-0, you could see Centennial kind of had to start and change. But that's one. The second was, 1996, my girls, that's the year my girls won the state title. And, the next to the last league ball game, we were on the road in halfway. At the end of the first quarter, we were up 10 and we lost by 33.
Wow.
And the only thing I can tell you is that I've seen complete shutdowns happened before, and I don't know exactly what happened that day, but to go from up 10 to down 33 in three quarters of a game, and we had to turn around, you know, that was just a bizarre, everything that they did went right and everything we did went wrong. And and then from that moment on, we won the next seven in a row, won the state title, and won 31 in a row after that.
Right. Wow.
You know, it's just like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But it was strange, bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, that's coaching high school athletes to a T right there, right? You get walloped by that and turn around and win a state title. So that's pretty.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, exactly.
Do you have a favorite special situation that you guys like to practice, you know, as you get into the season and you're working on that?
My favorite special, I mean, my favorite situation is to practice and work on his end of game stuff. Just like you were talking about, you know, are you going to foul? Aren't you going to foul? I don't know. In particular, I want to play good, tough defense and have a hand in the face of the shooter. Change the shot, don't block the shot, and we'll just do our best to keep it from getting a decent look at a three if they needed three or whatever. I don't know. I've seen games go both ways. You know, you put somebody on the line, they have the opportunity. They're at their rim for one thing. Rebound opportunity happens both ways. You know, and obviously it depends upon your matchups, but yeah.
Yeah.
End of game scenarios.
Yeah. How do you go about selecting your team captains or leaders?
I don't believe in, I ask for support and, or, you know, how they feel, but, I select my team captains. I see the interactions. I watch the interactions for quite a time before I put them in the role. But once I put them in the role, then I have high expectations for what they are going to do and provide for the team. And the leadership expectations fall directly upon them at that point. And I just don't believe in the popularity contest being the choice of captains.
Right. Do you give them like a list of responsibilities that you expect them to do?
As far as I set them down and talk to them specifically about all the scenarios that I have lived through that are possibilities that I want them to be proactive about staying on top of and helping us to be the best we can be.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you do with the girls?
Outlaw Nights is a real, you know, bring us together thing. And then summer ball is really a, you know, you can kind of let your hair down a little bit and relax and enjoy each other a lot more, take the pressure off. Yeah. Outlaw Nights.
What's your favorite drill?
We do a drill we call UCLA. It's a continuous 3-on-2, working on, you know, shot selection, attacking the basket, all the things you know. Anybody that runs a 3-on-2 drill, break, understanding passing and being efficient, that's my favorite drill.
Yeah. Do you guys, I know some people defensively will pressure after you make the shot. Is that something that you guys do, or do you just kind of play it straight up?
If I will jump into a press, I love to drop a full court press in there real quick. Depending upon situations, obviously, but if I'm going to jump into a press, yeah, we'll totally jump right into it and try to catch you off guard.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three passes, you know, if I'm effective, I can jump into it and it stays effective for a while, we'll stay in it. But I can come right back out of it, jump back into it, you know, running our base defense. And yeah, I'm a guy that I will mess with your head if I can.
Right.
You know, you don't know what's coming next. If I am being effective with a press, or if you call timeout to deal with what I'm doing, I will change what I'm doing right there.
Right.
You know, it's standard coaching stuff. I like to be the guy that's in charge of the pace of the game and, you know, basically in control of that activity. I love that, as does every basketball coach.
for sure. All right, Coach, that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Derek. I appreciate being here. I don't know that I provided much information. Just I've been a very fortunate coach, and I'm happy about it. I enjoy it. I think the kids enjoy me, and that's pretty much where I'm at. So thanks for having me.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Crawford, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.